Hey, Phil, let go of my ego. Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
Oh, for crying out loud. It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
I was talking about waffles.
Being polite. Well, it is something which we like to think in Britain we're pretty good at, and maybe that's a generally good thing. However, there are cases where being polite is maybe not such a good thing, and to actually talk through this in terms of how to actually not be polite to fraudsters, and precisely to tell people how to push off politely, we're delighted to welcome two tremendous individuals. One awesome, legendary talent, of course, we're referring to Stephanie Beecham, actress extraordinaire. Stephanie, an absolute delight to welcome you to the programme. How are you?
Terribly, terribly well. And you look like you're in the most amazing place.
Is that? Well, I like to feel if you're using a backdrop for a Zoom video thing, why not use the backdrop of Buckingham Palace Gardens to actually work through that system? It's important, you know, we work our way through that. But Stephanie, sharing with us the whole notion of this whole aspect of British politeness. I mean, you've experienced the United States, of course, with Dynasty. You've experienced a whole range of other aspects. You've seen the differences between Americans who doubtless would have said, oh, you're so polite and so on. It does seem as though that could be a weakness when it comes to people being targeted as part of a scam.
Apparently, one in five of us are too polite to hang up. And it's just terribly important that we just learn to hang up on a cold caller. If you don't know the person, never mind what they're trying to hassle you, never mind what information they're trying to give you, you can say it in whichever way you want to, but tell them to shove off, because it's no good. 60% of Brits, you know, have said that there have been more cold calls than before the pandemic. This pandemic has changed a lot. The scammers have got cleverer and all age groups are being targeted. It is a truly worrying infection of its own. Half of 18 to 24-year-olds have been scammed. Now, interestingly enough, compared with only 7% of over 65-year-olds, which is the little group of smug people that I'm representing. But even so, I tell you, a lot of my friends have been scammed, and some of them quite badly.
Absolutely. Now, if we turn to the head of fraud strategy at Santander, it's Chris Ainslie. I mean, Chris, that notion of younger people are more prone to be suckered into this whole thing, is that quite surprising? Or does it just say, well, with experience comes a certain wisdom when it comes to dealing with folk who actually say, but we are your Nigerian uncle who basically has been trying to contact you to actually give you lots of money?
I think it is surprising on the very face of it. But then, as you say, if you start to actually think about why that might be the case, we've got young people who are going to be a lot more used to literally just texting each other or communicating with people on social media, rather than having the experience of taking many phone calls and understanding that people won't just phone you in that way out of the blue and ask you to do certain things. It's a bit of experience and it's a bit of sort of common sense, I suppose, that older people seem to have.
I mean, Stephanie, that whole notion of pushing off politely, it is quite an intriguing sort of aspect, but it's something which presumably, again, one just has to sort of say, look, at the end of the day, go away.
Yes, you do. And very fast. They will get more information from you than you realise that you're giving. They might hear your dog barking in the background and they'll say, oh, you've got a dog. Yes, I know. You know, Sammy is so sweet. They'll know that Sammy is probably going to be your password for most things. They'll have more information and they can use their algorithms and they can. It's a clever setup. This is a lot of people working. This isn't individuals. This is big business.
Chris, in dealing with that industry of crime that Stephanie's just alluded to, and it does seem to be pretty scary, what are the top tips that Santander would effectively suggest are important things to bear in mind?
I think for this particular campaign and this message, we want it to be really simple so that people are able to follow it. So we've teamed up with Stephanie and the guys from the Chelsea Pensioners. And what we want to make sure is that people don't get into conversations with these scammers at all. They don't even encounter the request to do anything that could be dangerous. And that's the key message. So if you get an unexpected call or you don't know the caller personally, hanging up telling the person to push off politely is the simplest thing to do. What I would say is that you'll find it very unusual that anybody or any firm will try and phone you to ask for details of this going on or all those kind of things. You know, your phone company isn't going to phone you up and say that your router's broken and need to do something remotely. Those kind of things are what the fraudsters are using to hook people in, and not getting into those conversations and listening to their stories and their sweet talk is the best way to avoid any kind of problems in the future.
Stephanie, I was shocked to actually find that you were connected with the Chelsea Pensioners, and I can only imagine it was because you were a very much a junior version of the whole sort of sequence from that point of view, because it's a different line entirely. But in terms of, oh. Of the actual thing itself, saying goodbye, goodbye, et cetera, et cetera, was that something which you thought, yes, this is ideal to actually apply?
No, yes, I thought it was wonderful for them to do it. No, I've had nothing apart from admiration to do with that video. That's a completely separate thing. I was invited and delighted to do it because of my personal and friends' experiences of scamming and fraud, and it makes me so furious. I thought anything that we can do about it, you know, you can do something about it. If you can catch a number that has phoned you, if you can see the number, you can report it, and you should. You'll find out more on www.santander.co.uk/security. And that is where you can action fraud. Chris will be able to tell you more about it. But you needn't just stand there fuming. We can get some of these people.
Which is fantastic, Stephanie. We certainly appreciate that. And Chris, finally, Stephanie, showing constant professionalism there, giving us the web address to go to. Any other sort of tips or suggestions you'd actually suggest would be worth bearing in mind?
I think from our perspective, if something feels too good to be true in terms of a scam, that is probably the case. And if you're getting cold calls or being asked to do anything that you feel uncomfortable with, including even lie to your bank about why you're making a payment, the answer should be to hang up.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one that I found most astonishing when callers suggest that you should lie to your bank about why you're making a payment. I mean, it's just, the alarm bells should certainly be ringing with respect to that, which is outrageous. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with both of you today. We've got a final consumer-based question, which we'd like to put to all of our contributors, really. So, Stephanie, I'll start off with yourself. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Zoomer?
It's the name I give to these things, Stephanie. Let's face it, pre-pandemic, it'd be a telephone call. You'd be in a studio somewhere. I'd be in a studio, etc. Let's call them Zoomers.
OK. Your background is completely thrilling me. It's so beautiful. And so therefore, it highlights you very well. So I will say that you are my most exciting Zoomer.
Oh, I would. Well, the critical thing is, will you return sometime, Stephanie? Can we connect with you again in the near future?
Yes, of course. Don't have a disappointing background.
That has to be one of the best outros we've ever had. Stephanie Beecham, huge thanks. Chris Ainslie, has it been good for you?
It's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for the time. I hope you enjoyed seeing my son's nurse.
I mean, it's again, you know, it's what I call, you know, this is genuine radio with pictures, the theatre of the mind. It's the whole essence of radio and broadcasting. It's wonderful. Chris Ainslie from Santander and actress extraordinaire Stephanie Beecham, huge thanks. Be well and be safe. Take care now.
Bye.
Oh, the dead don't die any more than you or I. They're just ghosts inside dreams of a life that we don't know. They walk around us all the time, never paying any mind to the silly lives we lead. For the reaping we've all sown, there's a cup of coffee waiting on every corner. Someday we're gonna wake up and find the corner's gone, but the devil'll still be walking round this whole world alone. Cause afterlife is over, the afterlife goes on. There'll be old friends walking around in a somewhat familiar town that you saw once when you looked up from your phone. Nobody bothers saying hi, and you can save all your goodbyes. Stop trying to pretend that we're all not at home, and the streets look so empty in the morning. There'll be no one out at night for the lights to shine down on, but the dead'll still be walking around in this old world alone. Life is over, the afterlife goes on. Hearts break with loved ones' journey on. At the thought they're now forever gone, so we tell ourselves they're all still around us all the time. Oh, we're not forgotten, just memories left behind. But the dead'll still be walking round in this old world alone. Come life is over, the afterlife goes on. Our afterlife is over, the afterlife goes on.
Where do we go? Where do we start? Where do we begin? I don't know. It could be, what's Richard Fitzwilliams doing appearing on a station which has got an audience of zero? Yeah, I'm speaking about you, Great British TV, or Great British News. But we've got all sorts of wonderful things to work through, as it is the Richard Fitzwilliams, Natasha Armstrong and Robin Pearce feature, of course, Movies and Royals. Richard, do you want to start with your current sort of views on the Royals as given to GBTV and more?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things that's been interesting is a rumour that no more, and I can neither confirm nor deny, it appeared in the Mail. As we know, we haven't yet seen a photograph of Harry and Meghan's child, new child, baby Lily. Now, there are reports that they want the baby to be christened in the private chapel at Windsor Castle, which is where Archie was so controversially christened. I say controversially because this was the fact that there were no cameras. Usually there was some sort of record of who attended, and the godparents would tend to be named. I mean, there was a lot of fuss because Harry and Meghan had taken 2.4 million of the taxpayers' money to refurbish Frogmore House. And the problem with this was that it created anything to do with Archie, the way Archie's birth was reported, and then all sorts of rumours that kept constantly impinging on what would have been or should have been a happy period for the couple. I mean, there's no question that it was one of the reasons that they and the British press are so deeply embedded in mutual loathing. I can only describe it like that. Now, is this what the Sussexes want? I've always asked the question, what on earth do they want from the royal family? I mean, Harry is sixth in line to the throne, Archie seventh, Lily is eighth. When Charles ascends the throne, automatically Archie and Lily become his and her royal highness equally. The parents have that title but can't use it. So there are a lot of conundrums, a lot of question marks over what actually is going on here. And we will no doubt hear more. Remember, the Sussexes, on the one hand, are taking a five-month sabbatical from work. And on the other hand, it's been announced that Meghan will be involved in a family-friendly animated series for Netflix. We want to know what they're doing for what has been reported to be, we don't know the exact number, but amount, but what has been reported to be something like $100 million for their deal with Netflix, which they claim they only did because they have been cut off from funds. It would appear that that is an emotional truth, or you could say a part of their truth, because Clarence House accounts, and I was at the video meeting where this was discussed, indicate otherwise. But the facts of the matter are that we're going to follow a 12-year-old girl called Pearl and see which triggers from the past inspire her. So that's something else that they will be doing. Also interesting, the Queen speaking by video to several members of the Queen's Commonwealth Trust. It's a video call, and it's interesting just to remember that not only have close to the Queen's heart, the Commonwealth is, but also, of course, Harry was the president of the Queen's Commonwealth Trust and Meghan the vice president. And the original hope, which I certainly believed in, was that they would take the word as contemporary royals to the Commonwealth and the wider world as no one else could. But that, of course, has been pretty disastrous. The other point to make is that yesterday was the Duchess of Cornwall's birthday, and no doubt that, well, I mean, she's had a year where she was made Colonel-in-Chief of the Rifles in their virtual exchange with the Duke of Edinburgh, who, of course, sadly missed, and 348 engagements with Prince Charles and the Duchess, and also in the last year, and also she's been campaigning for sufferers of domestic abuse, and another aspect of her life should be very much encouraging reading. So we look forward to a year where they will be more active. She has said she can't wait to put aside her mask. Well, anything to do with masks is very controversial at the moment, as we all know. So the Prince of Wales is quoted in today's Mail as longing to do likewise. Is it wise for royals to talk about masks at the moment? I suspect probably not. But anyway, a royal week where further question marks over what the Sussexes intend to do. These are rumours, by the way. They're not confirmed, but then sometimes with rumours.
It's so wonderful that the couple are actually sort of engaging in complete privacy, because they're so stressed out by actually dealing with the public-facing line. Natasha, in Australia, now back in lockdown. Yay! What are your sort of thoughts on this particular thing? Is it a case of, frankly, I don't care anymore? I'm much more interested in seeing Spike Lee make a complete hog's wash of actually announcing the winner of the Cannes Film Festival.
Usually we do have quite a lot of media coverage out here, as I've said in past shows, about the royal family. But unfortunately, we are kind of going into meltdown right now over COVID. So the royals haven't really featured that much in our headlines at the moment.
I just cite what we were listening to with Stephanie Beecham, a fine actress, push off politely. That's the theme of her talk, which launched this little midweek drive morning edition. Chloe Rose, your thoughts on Harry and Meghan and the Duchess of Cornwall and birthdays, etc. I mean, does it really impact on the life of a Cleethorpes teacher?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in the royals, and I do understand the whole situation between, you know, how it must be really difficult to be a royal and be in the public eye. So I understand that the stress that that would bring. But I try not to comment too much, because, you know, sometimes it's worrying if I have an opinion, or I don't know. I don't know where I am with it, really.
Best say nothing, you know. Wear the mask and just actually stick with the whole zone of life.
That's
factor. Sebastian, what are your particular thoughts on this particular one?
I'm not yeah, sort of as it, it's not something I've been keeping up to date with. I've been more following when you referenced Spike Lee at Cannes. That was the big upset in my life.
Let's move to that, because it obviously neatly takes us round from the true joys of Tilda Swinton, who, if anybody actually should have actually deserved a merits, not necessarily this year, but certainly for her role in The Dead Don't Die, it has to be Tilda. Isn't that right, Robin? Shouldn't Tilda Swinton, actually for her Scottish accent alone, take all the plaudits for this particular year and every year, really?
Well, she convinced me better with her Scottish accent than Mel Gibson ever could. My film this week, as you've already alluded to, is The Dead Don't Die. And it's one of those films that have popped up on Netflix, and it seems to be a perfect storm. The cast alone makes it worth watching. As well as, of course, Tilda Swinton, we have Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Chloe Savini, Steve Buscemi, Danny Glover, Selena Gomez, Iggy Pop. It seems to be a really perfect cast. It's a horror comedy. Now, if you recall what I said last week when I mentioned that I'd seen the film Freaky, horror comedies can be hard to pull off successfully. And this is a film with a theme that we've seen before. Very loosely, sort of, it hooks itself onto the Night of the Living Dead scenario, where some kind of celestial event caused by polar fracking has knocked the Earth off slightly. Something somewhere that is not explained has turned the moon purple, and the dead start rising. We've seen similar done in Return of the Living Dead. We've seen similar done in Shaun of the Dead, of course. And the thing is, in my honest opinion, those two films did it better. The root of the story is Centerville, a rural community somewhere in America, where the dead start rising from the graves. They're reanimated. The local sheriff is Cliff Robertson, played by Bill Murray, and Ronnie Peterson, played by Adam Driver. It's a horror comedy, as I've mentioned, but sadly, it's not that funny. Now, it's not a bad movie. It's engaging. It has moments of brilliance, but I think that the problem is in Bill Murray. Now, I watched this as a precursor to start getting me in the mood for the new Ghostbusters movie. Bill Murray here does not give anywhere near the level of performance that he gave in, say, Lost in Translation, Groundhog Day, or even Ghostbusters. What he does is the same kind of shtick he did for Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters, which is underplay everything. So in this film, you've got people rising from the dead, people coming up from the graves, and there is one of the best graveyard sequences I've seen since Michael Jackson's Thriller video, to be honest. But after the first 20 minutes or so, Bill Murray ambling through the sets, barely reacting to anything, really does get a little bit tiresome, and it kind of sucks the life out of this film. There's also something else that kind of grates, which is a breaking down of the fourth wall, which is a very clever trick if you can do it successfully. As the film opens, we have the theme song called The Dead Don't Die. And the police officers are listening to this theme song while they're driving along. And one says to the other, "What's this?" And the other says, "Well, it's the theme song." And I'm thinking, okay, so you're going to follow this up? And they don't. Until in the end, where Adam Driver's character, whose basic catchphrase through the film is, "This won't end well, this won't end well." They're surrounded by zombies. Adam Driver says, "This won't end well." Bill Murray asks, "What do you mean?" "Oh, I've read the script."
No, Robin, please. I mean, just hold it there. When you actually sort of are providing that line, Bill Murray doesn't say, "What do you mean?" It's far too animated. "What do you mean?" It's a lot lower than that. Take it down.
It's as if Bill Murray has decided to just...
He was on Mogadon, the entire performance.
This, this works well in Ghostbusters, where, you know, you have an ensemble cast who are so manic and they are skilled comedians. But it really is Adam Driver who saves this film. It's, as I've said, not a bad film, but I'd be very, very hard-pressed to give it any more than a 6.
Mm. Natasha, have you seen The Dead Don't Die, or have you seen an animal, or maybe even several animals?
I've not seen The Dead Don't Die. I've just watched the trailer, and it was really interesting listening to what Robin was saying, because from the trailer, I got very excited. I mean, it's Tilda holding a katana, right? She's wielding a sword. It should be...
That's one of the moments of brilliance, but it just... Oh. Dies when Bill Murray is there, and I expected so much more from him.
Oh, that's really disappointing to hear, because I really want to watch this movie and be really as excited as I was in the trailer. So I will give it a go, because I'm in lockdown, so where else am I going to go? But I'll take in mind what you said.
Yeah, and Danny Glover's pretty good, as indeed is Tilda Swinton. Chloe Rose, in your vehicle somewhere in the east coast of England, The Dead Don't Die. Don't run over the zombie. It's just in front of you.
I found it quite hilarious, actually. Well, I must admit, the first 20 minutes or so, I thought, oh, it's sort of the type of film where you just, if you want something easy going to sort of watch that's a bit funny, you know, there's loads of zombies in it. But I've sort of felt like I got into it near the end of the show. And I know you were saying about, I'm not the greatest at names, but the Tilda, I found her character walk quite hilarious, where she would walk very robotic from one end of the like lawn to the next end of the lawn. I found that quite hilarious. And there was some good characters. I was expecting Selena Gomez to have a bigger part in it, actually. I don't know why, but I was at the time. But yeah, I wasn't massive on it, you know, like Robin had said about the Shaun of the Dead. I probably much preferred that film, but it was still a fun film. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed it. There you go.
Mildly amusing, according to Rotten Tomatoes, mostly thanks to Swinton's swanning and the dry as bone exchanges between Murray and Driver. Amy Nicholson writes, the angriest movie I've seen all year. This is Jim Jarmusch putting a very strong environmentalist stunts in the middle of a zombie movie. It's always nice if you're actually stuck for a plot line to actually have a flying saucer come in at the end. Look at the Indiana Jones scenario. Always good. Sebastian Mann, what about yourself?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it as something different, like sort of a different meta take on the zombie genre. But it also did feel like a big inside joke. So I think if you don't know stuff like The Night of the Living Dead, or if you don't care that they're driving the same car, as you know, I don't think it will have too much weight for a lot of like some people, but. Yeah, I thought it was fine. I was disappointed because Jim Jarmusch has done some really, really good films. But yeah. It's okay.
So your score, Sebastian, would be?
Yeah, probably the same as Robin. I think like a good 6. Yeah. It's all
right. I might go 5.5 or 6. All right, Chloe, what about yourself?
I'd say a 7. A 7 I'd go with.
So Jim Jarmusch would be good. Richard, has that persuaded you to go and check this one out, or is it a case of, no, if it hasn't got Spike Lee in it, I don't want to know, even if it has got Tilda Swinton?
Well, the Spike Lee episode was absolutely priceless. I mean, it's right up there with the infamous Oscar era where La La Land beat Moonlight. Of course, it didn't, and Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, those big... tribute being paid to them. There they were on stage, and there the envelope is completely mistaken, and it's a complete disaster. That's absolutely priceless. But I'm, you know, you always feel very, very sorry when that happens, because film ceremonies and awards...
Answer the question, Richard. Will you be going to see the zombie movie?
That cast is irresistible, except for a zombie horror comedy. Or comedy horror, no, I definitely won't.
Well, you know, moving on to something which I have to say is unlikely to actually be floating my boat in the near future, a wild serial killer story with some of the most controversial scenes of the festival, Titane, directed by Julia Ducournau, who became just the second woman to win the Palme d'Or after Jane Campion took the prize in 1993 for The Piano. Why didn't just, you know, Spike could have actually spoiled that right at the start, basically. I mean, surely it's what he does. I mean, have you enjoyed the Cannes Film Festival in a socially distanced way, Richard?
Well, I've been following some of the films, and I mean, I'm absolutely dying, for example, to see the French Dispatch, the new Wes Anderson film, set in a fictional Gallic commune with Bill Murray in a movie that I would prefer to see rather than the one you've been discussing.
Is he as good as he'll be in Ghostbusters? That's the key thing.
Well, The Souvenir Part 2 is the key thing because I'm fascinated on a Swinton Byrne in this movie, but also Tilda Swinton and Joanna Hogg directs. And you remember The Souvenir, I was fascinated by that. And then we've got Mothering Sunday, it's set at the time of the First World War. So there's a great deal to see. And yes, the Titane does sound weird, but will it be weird and wonderful or perhaps too wacky for me? I don't know.
And sadly, no sign of any Meghan or Harry productions as yet. Maybe they'll be entering next year. Robin, I know you were gutted when you were very disappointed to find that Richard hadn't decided to veer into the classic Bruce Willis territory of Surrogate. Is that the case?
Well, I thought, whoa, Bruce Willis, get the DVD out, refresh myself. And then I found it was something completely different.
Yeah. So off we go then, Richard, The Surrogate.
The Surrogate, I thought that this was an extremely interesting film. It's a film about issues and also it relies on very, very punchy dialogue. A young black woman, Jess, played by Jasmine Batchelor, agrees to be a surrogate mother for the child of an interracial gay couple, Josh, played by Chris Perfetti, and Aaron, played by Sullivan Jones. Now, this is directed by Jeremy Hirsch, who also wrote the movie, and it's a very impressive debut by him, because what is, well, the essence of the plot, all would probably have gone as expected, but a prenatal test reveals that the baby, and Jess is about 12 weeks when this happens, it will probably be born with Down syndrome. Now, this obviously is a very, very considerable conundrum for several reasons, for reasons of the emotional commitment, the what this will mean to the lives of those affected financially and so forth. So firstly, Jess, together with Josh and Aaron, they attend Down syndrome classes, they meet others who have babies with a similar affliction, and they establish links with those involved. And I mean, it's also, this is a very cynical movie because some of those mothers, for example, are, or would appear to, and those who study it and from an academic point of view, would appear to be using the fact that their child has Down syndrome for various reasons of their own. This is quite clever. So it's actually a film with a lot of observation in it, and it becomes very clear that the movie is moving towards challenging your views on what you would do. What happens, for example, when Jess discovers that Josh and Aaron want her to have an abortion. Financially, it's too much for them to take on, and it turns out that there are other issues involved too. And she, on the other hand, is drawn toward having the child, but she has to, she has, by the way, and this is an unusual, it's a bit of a cop-out, this, she's got a trust fund her grandparents set up where she can draw $100,000 from it, despite the fact that her parents, particularly her mother, a good performance, Karen, played by Tanya Pinkins, fiercely opposes the idea. But what is strong in this movie are the various arguments, the right to choose and the right also to have a say, the issues of abortion and the issues of commitment, some very good performances. Interesting, too, not only is this Jeremy Hirsch's debut as a director, which I mentioned, but Jasmine Batchelor's first major movie, too. So a lot of talent here, but there's no music. It relies on dialogue, and whereas there will obviously be no spoilers as to the way it ends, I was very taken up by this movie, and I recommend it. The acting with Jasmine Batchelor particularly is someone I hope we will see a great deal more of. But also, with dialogue like this, it's such a joy to go to a film and have something not only just to see, but also to listen.
And how can people actually check this one out, Richard? Do they have to actually risk life and limb by going to the cinema to do so?
No, they don't have to risk life and limb. I think it is available online too. But I saw it in the cinema, and I mean it. You know, this is worth doing if you can. Just as the second film we're discussing, Martin Eden, I saw in the cinema. I would also add, Alex, before you make this point, that I could count on one hand the numbers of other people in the cinema. So I'm afraid there are lots of problems which we all know at the moment.
But there are no problems, basically, when our current Secretary of State can actually sort of be found to test positive for COVID and have the Prime Minister or indeed Chancellor of the Exchequer, have they isolated? No, of course they haven't, because they're immune. Obviously, they're superheroes. Not as the case may be. Chloe, the surrogate, will you be checking this one out?
Absolutely. It does sound really interesting. And yeah, it's definitely something I will check out.
Okay, that's a definite yes there. Sebastian, have you seen it?
I haven't, no. It wasn't showing anywhere near me, and I didn't want to risk a trip to London for it. However, it does sound quite good, so I'll probably try catch it when it comes on streaming.
Okay. Robin, no sign of Bruce Willis, but has Richard sold you on this one?
I'm afraid not on this one, but then again, I don't think I'd be the target audience because you're talking now to a 61-year-old with the emotional maturity of an 8-year-old whose next trip to the cinema is to see Space Jam.
Yeah, not the original Space Jam, of course. This is the remake version.
No, so. Legacy.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking precise next week.
There we are. Got to be precise in these things, quite clearly. Okay, Richard, mark out a 10 for The Surrogate?
Oh, definitely, I would go to 8. I'd even be tempted for a 9, but I think 8. But it's excellent. Okay. It will come online, I'm sure.
So progressing from there, of course, we move to a tale of how a destitute proletarian background and circumstances can still be overcome if your name is Martin Eden, especially if you go into self-education.
Yes, absolutely. And I have to be frank, I mean, I'd never heard of Jack London's novel, which was what it was based on. It was in 1999. It's directed by Pietro Marcello. It is indeed about an aspiring writer who's self-educated and indeed linked with revolutionary movements. I would also ask when. One of the things with this movie, I spent a very large amount of time trying to satisfy myself as to precisely when it was set. And it was only when I felt obliged to check this online afterwards, which I do try not to do if I possibly can, that it was in fact intended to be set in no discernible era whatever. It's obviously Italy, and I thought it was Italy in the 1930s. There is, for example, a brief clip of the burning of the books, which would indicate that it was, because that obviously was Nazi Germany. But then you have brief clips throughout this movie, it's anything but conventional, of a sailing ship sinking, or indeed a variety of scenes from what may or may not be from the childhood of Martin, or indeed series clips of documentary. It's a use of documentary clips, and they don't necessarily fit in anywhere. The whole purpose of this movie would appear to be, and I didn't realize this, I knew nothing about it before, to make you uneasy and somewhat discoordinated. So this is a time of revolutionary fervor. It's whenever it's set, of repression of the proletariat, And Martin Eden, well, he falls in love above, well above his station. He's a sailor, and he helps the brother of a very rich girl called Elena, played by Jessica Cressy, and they have an affair. Now, this is not his first affair. His first girlfriend is Margarita, played by Denise Sardisco, and it's a challenge to him to write, to self-educate and to lift himself up, which indeed he does. I have to say that this movie, the way it's edited, the way it's set, it's very lavish and it draws you in. On the other hand, his jump from rags to riches, whereas it may be expected, nonetheless is cut in such a way that I thought he was in a hotel until I discovered it was actually the home he could afford, having been in poverty. His stories do get accepted. And he also is inspired by an elderly intellectual, Russ Brissenden, good performance there by Carlo Cecchi. And when he has to choose, why does he choose what he chooses when it comes to the women who are in his life? And what does fame, when it does arrive, actually do to him? As I say, full of unclear flashbacks, rather well made, bits of it, the lavishness, for example, of Elena's parents and their lifestyle, which of course he mocks, there are links here to movies, if you think of some of the Visconti and Bertolucci films, set in Italy, and I think a good performance by Luca Marinelli as...
He's choking with the emotion of it. I mean, whenever you mention that well-known Irish director, Bert Olucci, I can see what you're doing with respect to this. But, you know...
Well, I mean, the thing with Luca Marinelli is that I would just say to everyone, he's very, very good-looking. And that will add to the appeal of the movie. And yes, it's well-acted. It's beautifully shot. Not all the scenes are totally convincing. There's a revolutionary rally which is shot at the distance, and when they're supposed to be fighting, I don't think they're actually touching each other, but generally speaking, it's well directed. It's a curiosity, and a curiosity that people interested in this sort of movie and in this type of theme, what actually occurs, what are the prices that you pay for fame, nothing perhaps particularly novel there, but nonetheless compelling.
Yeah, it sounds not as compelling as this particular thing will be. I mean, there, if you want actually a fine-looking cast, that clearly is at the heart of everything from that point of view with respect to Mr. Bunny in full force. And I'm sure, Robin, you'll be keenly anticipating the joys of Legacy. But let's stick with Martin. Chloe, from what Richard said, is this a film that you think, self-education? Well, I'm in education. Maybe I should explore this whole thing.
Exactly. It's something I can relate to. I'm intrigued. I'd like to know more. I'd definitely like to see it. I wish I'd have seen these films because obviously it's even better to hear a review at the same time. But yeah, I'll definitely be having a look at that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Incidentally, where exactly are you in your motorised vehicle at present? Or is it just a film set and a crazy virtual backdrop?
Well, I am actually in my car, sillily, because my boyfriend's still asleep and I didn't want to wake him up, so I've gone in the car to do it.
Yeah, yeah. 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. When this is being recorded.
So, there you go.
I think it's just too much. Sebastian, what about yourself from the line of Martin Eden? Is it something that appeals?
Yeah, I did catch this one. I watched it on the Curzon Home Cinema. Yeah, I quite liked it. I wasn't... especially in love with it, but it's very enjoyable. It's really very well shot. It's very like handsomely made. Obviously very handsome cast, but I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from it, on top of what Richard said, is that it's really stunning to look at, if nothing else.
And a quantitative score for the whole thing?
I'd give it maybe like a hearty 7-8. I quite liked it.
So higher than the Dead movie, which is fair enough and kind of makes sense. And Natasha, have you seen the trailer?
Yes, I have seen the trailer. It looked very beautiful. You can tell that they've obviously spent a lot of money on it because it does look very grand. Like Richard, I was trying to work out what era it was setting. So it's interesting Thank you for confirming that, Richard, because I would have just watched it and been sort of really annoyed trying to work it out throughout the whole movie. it's interesting. Obviously, classic kind of storylines, the kind of the poor boy wants the rich girl and sort of pulling yourself up and educating yourself. Yeah, it sounds like a classic storyline, but it sounds like it's done, you know, in a beautiful way. So definitely be into it.
It's always nice to actually sort of ensure that Italy actually gets full pleasure, because let's face it, anybody that can actually put the smile off this person's particular line has got to be a winner from my point of view. Even though I noticed, Richard, you were tweeting your newfound love for the game of association football in recent things by basically saying that England were 1-0 up and it was all going to be successful and Gary Shaw was kind of going to be knighthood and it was going to be Sir Gareth, etc. Well, that didn't end very well, did it, Richard?
Well, so far as the football was concerned, yes, indeed, I tweeted at the interval, yeah. You're quite right. I'm afraid it did end as a disappointment, but I do think we have a lot to be proud of in a team which I hope will take us to future glory come the World Cup.
Not as long as this person is going to take credit for us in any way, shape or form. That is a complete nightmare. And I think ultimately you've got to actually take one for the team, the human race, as opposed to the evil lizards who happen to be running us at present. I shall say no more, because this isn't a political show. Robin, what about yourself? Will you be checking out Martin Eden?
Well, it sounds sumptuously made. And incidentally, I was considering this morning doing this broadcast from my car with the aircon on, but I know that I just get a stern lecture from yourself, Alex, for gas guzzling. As for Martin Eden, it sounds sumptuously visual and a feast, but the plot itself sounds a little bit vague for me.
Yes, it is deliberately somewhat, as we've been saying, an obscure set, a rather obscure time, and it's made in a rather artistic way. But I was just drawn in. I mentioned Visconti and Bertolucci. I mean, visually, Visconti's movies are absolutely ravishing, with The Leopard and Senso and so on, and Bertolucci with the likes of The Conformist. And The Spider's Stratagem. It's the set that somehow do it, even if you're perhaps seeing a theme you've seen before. And there are, I would point out, subtitles, but hopefully it's an Italian-French movie.
And sadly, no music by Sturgill Simpson in this particular movie, which is a pity, because obviously Sturgill Simpson's music, and I hope, Chloe, you will be doing a cover version of The Dead Don't Die, if only to actually sort of keep Robin along his country music love. And let's do it for Tessa, you know, Tessa Snart.
Yes, that'd be amazing. I actually love that song. It sounds terrible, but I've not actually heard it before till that point. And, you know, this is even more embarrassing. But yeah, it's definitely a song that I actually like. So who knows? Maybe I should cover it, like you say.
I agree.
Yes, thank you, Robin.
You hear it time and time again.
Halloween, that's great.
Of course, Robin, again, if you're talking about gas guzzly, then take Adam Driver's car. That's what I'd like you to say. I'd like you to actually use Adam Driver's car. That would be much better than your Blue Thunder at present.
There is nothing wrong with the Blue Thunder.
Yeah. Okay.
There's enough muscle fuel left.
You might be responsible singularly with that vehicle for tipping the earth on its axis. That's all I shall say. Okay, that pretty much wraps up the sequence. Natasha, we did say you're back in lockdown in Australia, so it's nice to see you're pointing the way to where the rest of the world will be going. Although I gather in America, in Florida in particular, everybody's free. Freedom Day coming around the corner. You might be listening to this after Freedom Day. Do you sort of get a vibe from Australia saying, yes, Britain's got it right now, set us all free? Herd immunity.
Well, we're actually very lucky in Victoria, because this is only meant to be a 5-day lockdown. I may well eat my words come Wednesday and we might be trapped until the end of August. I hope not. We're sort of getting quite low numbers at the minute. We're getting about 15 or so a day, whereas New South Wales, our neighbours, unfortunately, are getting over 100 a day. So I think it's going to be pretty rough for the citizens of Sydney for a while to come. But hopefully in Melbourne, it's going to be short, sharp, but over quickly, I hope.
Yeah, Britain, meanwhile,
Alex, Britain is not going to be free on Freedom Day. England is. There are different freedom days for Scotland and Wales. Yeah, we are still constricted.
That's because we have the highest number since January of COVID cases, so it's all good stuff. Still, as long as we have the current incumbent, as I say, and of course Sadiq Khan in charge as well, all's well with the world.
London, I have a question for you, Alex, if all's well with the world. Here's a question for you. I just watched Andrew Marr, a very lively hour, as you can imagine, grilling one of the ministers. What would you do if you were in charge?
I think we'd actually pray, Richard. That's the bottom line. Pray. Four letters, okay, very effective.
Yeah, then quote from a man.
On your knees, Richard, on your knees and pray. Not just one knee, both knees. Pray. End of. To Natasha Armstrong, Richard Fitzwilliams, Chloe Rose, Sebastian Mann, and Robin Pierce. Huge thanks. Robin, practice the baseball. The basketball, because, of course, that's what Space Jam is all around.
I do dribble quite well.
No chance that Richard will actually catch that, because it is, of course, animated and he doesn't do animation. So we'll find out what delights he'll be bringing to us in the near future. For the moment, keep on keeping on and keep watching the movies.
Oh, the dead don't die any more than you or I. They're just ghosts inside dreams of a life that we don't know. They walk around us all the time, never paying any mind to the silly lives we lead, or the reaping we've all sown. There's a cup coffee waiting on every corner. Someday we're gonna wake up and find the corner's gone, but the devil'll still be walking round this whole world alone. Cause afterlife is over, the afterlife goes on. There'll be old friends walking around in a somewhat familiar town that you saw once when you looked up from your phone. Nobody bothers saying hi, and you can save all your goodbyes. Stop trying to pretend that we're all not at home, and the streets look so empty in the morning. There'll be no one out at night for the lights to shine down on, but the dead'll still be walking around in this whole world alone. Life is over, the afterlife goes on. Hearts break with loved ones' journey on. At the thought they're now forever gone, so we tell ourselves they're all still around us all the time. Oh, we're not forgotten, just memories left behind. But the dead'll still be walking round in this old world alone. Come life is over, the afterlife goes on. Our afterlife is over,